huge topic, no doubt. I'll add a few more words to this. You're speaking from one side of the fence, but there are many devotees on the other side who they have a desire to be Krishna conscious, but they are addicted to bad habits, and at some point they fell down or they never really got up, and it just seems very, very difficult for them to come out of the hole into which they have fallen. So, you know, and they want Krishna consciousness and they're acting in Krishna consciousness, but they again and again they fall down and they don't. They don't want to. They feel they don't want to do it, but again and again they do it. And then, so it's one thing to say they should do it, but then practically, what do they do? How do you get out of that hole? Well, it's a good thing to understand. First of all, I am in a hole, and to want to improve. That's a very good start, actually. And we may say have counseling, this, that, but that may be also some if you can get anyone to senior grihasthas to guide you. It's usually junior grihasthas who have this problem. It may go on, you know, men like 50, 60 years old who, you know, they may have been chanting Hare Krishna for many years or doing the same thing. But what's always we find in Shastra, it's recommending grihasthas should regularly associate with and hear from advanced devotees. Go on hearing. Go on hearing. You're in the hole, but take your other hole, take your ear, and get that. Let the doses of Krishna Katha enter the ear. That will have its effect in due course of time. Don't give up the process of hearing and chanting. Don't think that it's enough. It's okay. I'm in a hole, but I'm hearing and chanting, so it's okay. We shouldn't think like that. But we also shouldn't. We should understand. We're all fallen. And go on with the process of hearing and chanting. That will have its effect in due course of time. Krishna will be pleased by that. And in due course of time means we shouldn't wait. Immediately stop all these nasty things. And then, yes, I will. And then again, fall. And then again, yes, I will. And then again. But the by hearing and hearing and hearing, maybe over months and maybe over years, the sincerity to go on hearing that, even though it may be, some things we may hear may be very distasteful to us, because if we listen to Shastra, we'll find so many things about attached householders, yan maitunadi grihamedi sukham hi tucham. If we actually hear Bhagavatam, we'll have to hear these things. That family life is centered around the tucham, the insignificant, or just, it almost sounds like spitting, doesn't it? Tucham. So it's centered around the very paltry and insignificant pleasure of sex life. Eventually that will stick in the heart and have its effect, along with hearing about the names, forms, qualities and pastimes of Krishna. It's not like the Mayavadis who Nari Stana Bharam Nabhidesham, Shankaracharya's Maga, don't go there. Don't go to that heavy breast of the woman and the beautiful midriff. Don't go, he says. So that's one side, but the other side is also hearing. not in a sentimental way, but hearing from devotees about the what is that? Yan Krishna Nama Charitadi Sitaptya Pitya. I always forget. Pitop Patapta Rasanadi Rochikanu. What is it? Kintva Duradani Dunim Kalusaiva Jushta Svadvi Kramed Bhavati. Tadgala Mula Hantri. By sticking to this process of hearing and chanting about Krishna, then gradually that perverted taste will become purified, and the desire for material enjoyment will be cut at the root. So that's another consideration. Again, this is a very big subject. I have to hide away for a few years. I often think about that. I have many books to write, including Family Life in Krishna Consciousness. Actually, these are very important topics, and there should be books written on this. But ideally, have one child, maybe two children, and just be Krishna conscious. But we find also sometimes Prabhupada spoke about having, we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he speaks how a woman likes to have many children. And practical psychology, we see that with a woman's body comes a physical need to have children. It means that even if they don't, then they're more liable to have various severe physical diseases. I know this may be very, it's very difficult for women who didn't get married to hear this, because, for this very reason. There's a very strong psychological need also to have children. And that's for devotees also. I mean, Prabhupada said about Gandhari, even though she was such a great person, such a chaste wife, that when she heard that her husband-to-be, she didn't choose her husband. She was told, this is going to be your husband. Oh, he's blind. Immediately she blindfolded herself. But still, when she heard that Kunti had delivered a child before her, she was so frustrated, Prabhupada said, out of the natural, the woman's envy, that nature, even though she had such high principles, but the natural psychology that came with that body was such that out of frustration she beat her own pregnant belly. And as a result she got, anyway, then she got 101 children from that. So it's a very every body brings with it very strong conditioning. As we were discussing this morning, it's like you may be we don't see devotees in terms of their bodily situation, but at the same time, we might expect a devotee who's born in Britain to have characteristics like a British person or a devotee born in Italy. We expect them in general to be more emotional than a devotee born in Britain, because the conditioning is so strong, and the conditioning that goes with a woman's body is also very, very strong. And although we may think that I'll just be a pure devotee, we often see that in what modern psychological terms they'd call to, like, to be a balanced person, that if women don't have children, 1, 2, 3, 4 more maybe, that that envious nature, which Shastra states is inherent in women, is more likely to. It's inherent in all conditioned living beings, but according to Shastra, it's particularly there in the female body, goes with the female body. But that will, if that is not rectified and purified by motherly love, which Prabhupada said is the closest thing to pure spiritual love, is the love of a mother for her child. So if there's not profuse channels or outlets for motherly love, then the tendency to be envious, which along with envy comes total irrationality, that will also manifest. So I beg to differ, as we were discussing this morning. Being British, I beg to differ. I politely beg to differ here. That in the long term, we may be better that women do have many children. And then when they get older, they have many children and grandchildren to, if they've lived as mothers and they've actually been mothers and loving their children instead of just sending them off to a kindergarten and then school and then they never see their children hardly, then naturally their children will love them and they'll be loved in their older age and they'll have grandchildren and they'll be kept busy. And in Krishna consciousness, it's not all just mundane, but the endeavor of the husband and wife is seriously to bring their children to Krishna, which is a spiritual endeavor. It's not that because the babies pass stool, everyone knows they pass stool, they don't have any idea that they shouldn't pass stool in their mother's sari or when you're holding them up for a photograph or whatever. So you may think, well, that's completely mundane. But the endeavor to bring children to Krishna consciousness, that Prabhupada said is more from mother, that's more important than deity worship. He instructed one of his disciples who was a pujari, the well-known letter, that for you, child worship is more important than deity worship. He told her that to look after your child is more important than directly worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how important it is, Prabhupada, he gave so much, how important it is to look after these children, because they're sent by Krishna. So it may be for some that they can have one or two and just be content with that, but personally I think it would be very nice preaching if, because actually all women like to have many children, actually, although they're brainwashed by the modern society into thinking that having children is something horrible. But actually the natural tendency, as we can see from children, from little girls when they're 2 years old or 3 years old, they naturally start to look after little babies, even though they themselves are a baby. Because they have that natural tendency is there. So Prabhupada wanted these communities where devotees can live, families, relatively peacefully as one can be in this modern nasty world, and show how it is possible to live even in this modern nasty world with families in which the men are men and the women are women, and they know, the men know what it means to be a man and the woman knows what it means to be a man, and she doesn't try to make him into anything else, and vice versa. Instead of, you don't know who's a man or who's a woman, or it may be just by the name, and even then you can't be sure. So the men are men, the women are women, and they cooperate together in Krishna consciousness. They have children, they live, the children don't hate their parents or neglect their parents. They actually love their parents, which is a rarity in the modern age, because the parents never loved their children. They just thought their children were just some kind of nuisance that we have to look after for a few years before we throw them out of the house, if they don't throw us out or if they don't kill us before that. So people will appreciate that this is how human life should be lived. Prabhupada wanted to show that. He wanted to show how people can live as real human beings, and then we can come to the spiritual platform. So this is very important preaching. Looking for the woman, to look after her children and raise them in Krishna consciousness in the modern age, because no one looks after their children properly, because they're all busy doing so many other things. They don't have time for the thing that God ordained their body to do, which is to look after children. So just to do that, and to be happy to do that, and actually you will be happy, and you won't be happy trying to do anything else. So if you do that, that will be excellent preaching. If this is, Prabhupada had a social plan also. So that's my outlook on this.
If a devotee who is legally married to a non-devotee gets divorced, and after some time he wishes to remarry, now with a devotee, is it okay for him to have the yagya ceremony, the offices, the question by Murari Uttadas?
You want to answer that?
Ukoliko se bhakta koji je oženjen pred matičarom za nedoktinu razvede, i nakon nekog vremena se poželi ponovo ženiti sada doktinom, da li je u redu da se tako razvedeni bhakte ženi uz rakiju? Okay, a person was married to a non-devotee lady and then got divorced. Now he wants to marry again.
Before he joined?
He doesn't say.
It's not stated. You see?
Both cases. So he was married to a non-devotee, then divorced and wants to marry a devotee.
In Krishna consciousness.
In Krishna consciousness, can he take fire yagya? Can he marry for the second time now with fire yagya?
I hope I will not be back to differ or something like this, but I would very
well
be interested to him. But I wouldn't understand how a karmic activity, any kind of karmic activity, performed before the person comes to Krishna consciousness, should have any relevance once he commit himself to the Vedic, So I would like to add something a little bit. I'm very eager to hear the
Maharaj.
One point I don't have it clear.
Yes,
one point what, son?
I'm just bringing a point here.
Bringing
this a little bit further. What about
šta?
If a couple
is
karmically legally married before they even know Krishna consciousness?
Znači, karmički, znači, legalno su vjenčani prije svjesnosti Krishna.
In other words, their relation was created somewhere in some disco.
Znači, njihov odnos je započeo nekom disco klubu ili bilo što tako.
They come to Krishna consciousness.
Dođu u svjesnost Krishna.
With a quite a clear idea that their marriage is not going to work.
Sa prilično jasnom idejom da njihov brak neće ostati.
So they would almost prefer to divorce before they officially join.
Da bi se oni rađe razveli prije nego što se službeno pridruže.
And start their Krishna conscious careers, brahmachari, brahmacharini.
I započeo svoje karijere, sve su Krishna kao brahmachari, brahmacharini.
Ending up here is their karmic time.
I tako je završio svoje karmičko vrijeme.
What shall teacher do then?
Propovjednik treba tu
uraditi. No divorce.
Reći ne razvod.
Relating to a karmic situation was created before the time they approached.
Znači, vodim se na karmičnu situaciju koja je stvarena prije nego što se došlo sve sam sviša.
I have a practical example of that can lead to, but I would like to read here maybe some more authorized.
Znači, imam primjere do čega to se može dovesti, ali ti običu to bude.
I'm not going to comment more on this. I'm not going to differ with you.
On this.
Because you know, all of these kind of situation, they're very complex, and it's difficult to give generalizations. You have to see the individual case, you know. And one response to this might be, you know, well, you already had your sex life and this and that, you know, why get married again at all? That's another response. You just forget the whole thing. You came to Krishna consciousness. What do you need that for? That's another possible response.
Yeah, I experienced personally, it's so intricate and so individual. As a preacher,
yeah.
I wouldn't like to get in there at all. I would tell them it's up to you. You make a decision, you take the responsibility. We can only assist you in how to proceed in Krishna consciousness. But this is also an answer to me. That it is very individual. And very complex.
And but devotees, they want guidance on these things. But people are so messed up that they even if you give them guidance and things go wrong, and then they blame the people who guided them. And then no one wants to guide anyone. That's the situation. It's like, you know, bite the hand that feeds you syndrome. So it's a bad age. It's a very difficult age. No doubt. So hearing and chanting about Krishna should go on. Prabhupada himself, in the beginning, he put the boyfriends and girlfriends, got them married, and here's an interesting thing. I don't think I've ever said it before publicly, but I'll say it now as we're in this, as we're discussing all these things. This is recorded by Satsarup Maharaj in his book, A Visit to Boston, I think the name of the book is, or something like that. It's Memories of Early Days of the Krishna Conscious Movement. Prabhupada came to the Boston town. He said, why are all the women sick? He said, it's because they're not having sex. They all need to get married. And he arranged marriage. He called some devotees here, there. He said, Vaikunthanath, would you like to marry Sharada? He said, okay, Prabhupada. I said, okay, come. Tomorrow you're getting married. So Prabhupada did. But then after a few years, he said, he wrote a letter saying, now I'm disgusted. I don't have anything more to do with marriage. They can get married, but I'm not. Because Prabhupada was expecting they'd take it seriously, but in many cases they didn't. Anyway, could we, I think, you know, we could have some other subject. You know. Enough on that for now. There's no end to this. It's, you know, it's called Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam, Punarapi Janani Jatare Shayanam. It's again and again getting born in a womb and again dying. It just goes on and on and on. And this is the motor for the movement. What's that which keeps us moving in the 8,400,000 species of life? It's sex desire. Ultimately we have to overcome it. Which is seems to me to be the emphasis of Prabhupada's teachings, that you know, you can discuss this way, you can discuss this way, that way, that way, it's so complicated. But there's ultimately no end to it. Ultimately you have to give it up. That's the only way to get out of the complexities. It's just like in India, I see many people, they take to Krishna consciousness, they get initiated, and they still have all pictures of demigods on their altar. Not my disciple, I take them off. Or they don't even get initiated before, but they say, well, we've been doing it for so many years, and I say, well, it's all right, but at some point, either in this life or the next life or after 10 million lives, you have to sarvadhaman paritya jama mekam sharanam braja. You have to stop, because unless you stop, you're not going to go back to Godhead. So you might as well stop now. And like I say, I usually help them by removing the pictures, which isn't always appreciated. Some people appreciate because they can't do it themselves. They're just too attached. So I can't do that with your sex life. But it's the same principle. At some point, you're going to have to stop. That's true for everyone. At some point, we're going to have to surrender to Krishna and get out of this. So at least we should go on hearing that. Stane sita shuti katang tanuvang manobi ye praya shojitititopi apitais trilokyam. Whatever situation we're in, we should go on hearing about Krishna, dedicating our life in His service. And by doing this, we can conquer the otherwise unconquerable Krishna.
Can you give us some practical advice how to establish balance between your material and spiritual life?
Okay, over to you. Well, I'll just say something first. This is a common question. I say there's no balance. It's 100% spiritual life and 0% material life. That's the proper balance. Now for the practical. We're not there. So, what to do? Over to you.
Well, I can give it only over to Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada gives the example of an unchaste woman who, as Shnyaka Pandit said, female said the capacity on the way from the husband to the boyfriend
до любовника.
Meditate about the third man.
Да медитира и третьим штарт.
You will not do something.
А нечто нечто примет.
Man can do.
Штарт стране.
But Prabhupada is using this example to define the position of a devotee in a material world.
Да дефинира положение бхакти на всем свете.
He is in chase to Krishna.
Он юри за Кришну.
And unchaste to Maya.
Он верен Кришне, а не верен Майе.
But he's living in a world of Maya.
А он живи в свете Майи.
So diplomacy is needed.
Значит, дипломатия потребна.
He acts like, you know, socially.
Он делает как дружественно.
It's especially relating to Brihastha.
Значит, вопрос на собеседование Брихастха.
Hello, good morning, how are you?
Oh, yes. Доброе утро, как остаешь?
How is the money, how is the balance?
Как канавас, как убило?
Bye-bye.
До видения.
Prabhupada said, whatever is needed.
Prabhupada said, что говорит потребно.
You have to work, you have to
make money. It's
not you.
Not you.
We are cheating them all. We are not with them. We do what is needed to be done.
But
in his consciousness, the devotee is always at Krishna. So, this is the example which just dropped in my head. But Prabhupada said only what we have to do.
Но Прабхупада рекла само, что можем править.
We don't like their association, we don't enjoy their association.
Мы не уживаем в него дружбу.
Lord is constantly meditating about Krishna, like this lady who always meditates about her boyfriend.
Значит, Бхакта увек медитирует о Кришне, каждый той жены увек медитирует о любовнице.
While nicely serving the husband.
Доктор рекла служит мужу.
Housewives have good opportunity to be Krishna conscious. By there's one verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam which is like the crux of all of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feelings for Krishna. So it's extremely feelingful. But it's not apparent. It's not even in the Vrindavan pastime. It's the gopis in Kurukshetra speaking to Krishna in a duplicitous way. So we'll find that Rathyatra Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was singing some kind of romantic song, which was just some love song, but Rupa Goswami understood the implication. Anyway, the housewives at home looking after their children and looking like ordinary housewives, they can meditate upon Krishna like the gopis did. We are just ordinary housewives. How can we attain you, who the great yogis meditate upon and meditate in their deep meditation? They meditate, and we're just ordinary housewives. So we beg you to place your lotus feet in our hearts. So you can look up this verse. There's no even purport. I don't know if the acharyas even comment on it. It just seems, it's a verse. It's at the end of, I believe, it's the 87th chapter. Ahus chitela ninanaba padaravindam yogeshvarai hridi vichincha agadhabodham, etc. You can see this. This is how in your household of life you can be fully absorbed in Krishna and while appearing to be just a housewife. Gopis were just housewives, that's all. Just housewives.
I have heard that the members of Madhva Sampradaya do not admit Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Is this true? Чувствуете приведенцы Мадхва Сампрадая не признают Господа Чайтанья как Всевышнего Божества, чтобы дали это точно?
Yes, it's true.
Да, истина.
So far, we have more preaching to do. One devotee came to me last year when I was staying in Udupi, which is the seat of the Madhva Sampradaya. You don't mind if I'm answering? I think it's more my line. And he said that in the just been in the temple, means the Krishna temple, the main temple of the Madhva Sampradaya. And one young man, young Brahmin, who was studying, they study the under the Madhva Sannyasis, the Nyaya Sudha and all the classical books of Madhvacharya. He said, I can't work it out. I see all you Westerners, devotees, and you seem to be very devotional, but according to our understanding, you can't be devotees at all because you have to be born in a Madhva family to be a devotee. But he said, if you can give me Shastric evidence that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then I'll immediately accept it, because that's the whole point. Madhva, he very strongly bases everything on Shastra, which all the traditional Sampradayas do, and they have to do. So this devotee came to me and said, do you have any Shastra going? He said, we have it, but they won't accept it. Because there's no statement in any, what we might say, recognized Shastra that directly says, or a Shastra that everyone will accept, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's indirect. Krishna Varnam Twisha Krishnam, this is the most commonly quoted verse. And if it's not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then who is it? Who fits that description of the Kali Yuga? In Kali Yuga, Krishna comes not in a black form, and he spreads Sankirtan. Intelligent persons worship him by Sankirtan. Who does that refer to if not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? And there are others. Chanakalo is stated by Chanakalo Yadabhavat. Prahlad Maharaj says that you appear in various yugas, in various forms, and in Kali Yuga you are covered. Therefore you are known as Tri Yuga, or one who appears only in three yugas. So the Madhvas take the straightforward explanation of this, that there is no avatar in Kali Yuga. And this was a discussion between Gopinath Acharya and Sarvabhauma, in which Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, well, the Shastra says there is no avatar in Kali Yuga. But then we ended the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, there's the description of the avatar for Kali Yuga. Anyway, in there's no direct statement in the in a Shastra that will be accepted both by the Madhvas and by the Gauriyas that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is no direct statement. There are all kinds of indirect Rukmavanam, Adityavanam, there's so many indirect statements in accepted Shastras, and in Shastras which everyone won't accept, there are direct statements. But the Madhva Sampradaya, they're known as Tattvavadis. So to convince them of this, we'll have to take them on a paradigm shift. That tattva, or philosophy, or understanding of categories, or reality, that reaches its highest point is rasa jnanam, which is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam itself. The Srimad Tatshinvatam rasa jnanam. So when we understand that rasova, it's all there in Shastra. Rasova isaha. The supreme is rasa. So, what are the implications of this? The Madhvas, or Madhvacharya himself, was so strongly preaching that the supreme is a person. But what are the implications of that? That is developed in the Gaurīya Vaiṣṇava Sampradaya. A person means he is full of rasa, full of love, full of life. So this is rasa vichar. The transcendental understanding of rasa is developed in the Gaurīya Sampradaya. It's the logical development of accepting the supreme as a person. Up to Gopi Bhav. And then, even beyond that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That in rasa vichar, there must be Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there's also there in Shastra, but it's covered for various reasons of his own. So it is in Shastra, but not directly. It requires a different approach. But it's difficult for them to accept, because they presume that Madhva has said everything, and there's nothing beyond this. So they ultimately, in the discussion between Gopinatha Acharya and Sarvabhauma Bhatta Acharya, Gopinatha Acharya quoted this Prasada Leshanugrahita Evahi. Only when you get the mercy of Krishna, then you can understand this. And Sarvabhauma said, "Oh, you got the mercy and I didn't?" And Gopinath said, "Well, you just wait. You have to wait and see. If you get the mercy, you'll understand it." So that doesn't seem to be very philosophical. It won't be very satisfying to a tattvavadi. But actually, it's a fact. Now, in Bangalore, which is a great center of Madhva learning, they still have their old tradition going on. They write books in Sanskrit just for circulation among their own small Madhva community. The community of Madhva pundits. But among their own community, they take themselves very seriously, and they should do, because they have serious topic. Krishna consciousness, as we call it. They don't call it that. So they're one of the most respected pundits. Gokul Chandra told me he had a lot of contact. In that time, you had a lot of contact with the pundits there. That one of the most respected elder pundits is writing for the Madhva pundits, in Sanskrit, of course, about Rupa Goswami's contribution of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that there is nothing like this. In the whole, there is nothing comparable to this in the whole Vaishnava world. What is the contribution of Rupa Goswami? So that may be a breakthrough in their way of thinking, because they can see, they can't understand it. They see there's so many people coming who are devotees, and they're chanting and they're dancing. They obviously have devotion, but it doesn't match up with their descriptions in their understanding, which is very logical and based on Shastra. So they're bewildered, and some reject it and say it's they're not devotees, they're bogus, they're not following Madhva, and how can they call themselves followers of Madhva? And others, they're very happy, yes, it's very nice, they're devotees, but they can't just, actually, if you're a strict follower, if you're an orthodox follower of the Madhvas, you have to reject ISKCON and everything else. But if you're following just the philosophy, but if you're more devotional, which is what it's supposed to be, then you'll welcome the devotees. So we find among the Madhvas, the followers of the present followers of Madhvacharya, some still are very close-minded and against ISKCON, but some like it, and they think it's something very wonderful. And this they say, despite our differences, you should see these people are spreading Hari Bhakti all over the world. But then some of the Madhvas think, what are you doing spreading Hari Bhakti all over the world? You're not supposed to do that. Let them all go to hell. So indirectly, some of them are accepting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But philosophically, it's difficult for them. They can't put two and two together. So, like I'm again and again saying, there's a huge amount of work to be done in researching, writing, and filling in all the establishing Krishna consciousness in the modern world. That's done in every generation. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, their principal job was to sit and write books to establish everything that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught and manifested. So it's required in every generation. In the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the six Goswamis wrote so many books. Then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he established the transcendental Parakya Rasa. Baladev Vidyabhushan, out of necessity, he compiled the Govinda Bhasha, or he was dictated to him by the deity Govinda. Bhaktivinoda Thakur with the Gaurya Sampradaya in tatters, in ruins, apparently. Of course, it can never be, the essence of it can never be destroyed, but the teachings, the spirit, he worked in society and interacted with people, but he wrote profusely. And his writings form the basis of the present Krishna conscious movement. It wasn't just his prediction, but he predicted that this would come soon, but his writings also formed the basis and gave the direction. And then in the next generation, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote or had his disciples write so many things, and he had so many ambitions to write so many, he wanted so many books published. Prabhupada said, I imbibed Krishna consciousness from my father, and the one thing I learned from my Guru Maharaj was book production. So there's a lot of work, there's a huge amount of work to do in research, writing, translation. So that's one of the things, is making the bridge for the Madhvas by demonstrating to them the ultimate, what is the meaning of Raso Vai Saha? What is the ultimate meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam? That won't come about only by writing books. The chanting and dancing, people see that and they become purified. And when they want to take part in that, then they can begin to understand this philosophy that attracts them and purifies their hearts. If we only gave books and discussed it, there'd be no way to move among the Madhvas at all. But when they see our devotees chanting, dancing, then they realize this. And it's just as the tourists on the beach in Croatia realize this. They may realize in a very rudimentary way, but they begin to realize there's something. When they see year after, especially when they see year after year after year, devotees are dancing and chanting, and they realize there's something solid here. And if we have our farm communities, then they'll realize much more too. Practical demonstration. Should we take one more question and finish?
It is said that kirtan is even more powerful than japa. Do you think that there is enough stress? Do you think that there is enough stress on quality kirtan as it is maybe on chanting japa, like japa workshops and japa retreats?
It's over to you now.
Kaže se da je kirtan čak i snažniji od džape. Da li misliš da se dovoljno...
Well, I'm talking so much, I'll give it over to you.
Kao što se možda naglašava mantranje džape, jer imamo džape radionice, džape retrite, tako se.
Oh, somebody mentioned džape retrite.
As an example.
Well, this is not my department.
It's a very good point.
To je jako dobro point.
Yeah, quality in chanting in kirtan also. It's not an entertainment. What is the mood in which we should be chanting? But many of the points, of course, they'll be the same as we were discussing in japa, how we should chant japa. It's the mood in which we should be chanting is the same as in kirtan as in japa. But regular hearing and chanting is required. Apart from having intensive japa workshops or whatever, just regular... That's all right, but the basic process is to regularly hear every day. And not even necessarily directly about chanting the holy names, but the whole panorama of the philosophy of practice and practice of Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada did. He daily gave class on all topics, and all of this combinedly will give us inspiration to chant. Hearing and chanting are inseparable. There's no proper chanting without proper hearing. So yeah, how should we chant? Not in the mood of a performer, I'm enjoying it. We should always remember that this chanting is for the pleasure of Krishna, which is why I always say that when we're chanting in front of the deities, let us please remember that they're here and that we're chanting their names for their pleasure and not just go off in some corner with our backs to the deities and forget all about them while we're enjoying ourselves chanting Hare Krishna. It's to me, it just seems very strange. Just sometimes I give the example. Okay, here's a funny thing for you. All right. Now, what else did I want to say to you?
Šta sam vam ono još htio reći?
You know, you're all great, wonderful
people. Da, vi ste svi, ja jako ti bakte.
Isn't it ridiculous? You're praising someone, but you can't even look at them.
Ne možete ga ni pogledati.
It's very strange. Remember the deities. The deity is Krishna. We're supposed to... The name is Krishna. The name, therefore, A equals B, B equals C, therefore A equals C. Little arithmetic here. So, Krishna is his name, Krishna is the deity. We chant the name in front of the deity and don't forget that we're chanting to him, for him, begging his mercy. And I'll finish there. Hare Krishna. And tomorrow morning. We'll meet again. Krishna willing. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you for your appreciation, but please don't clap. Because then I get the idea that, you know, it's some kind of performance and the performance is appreciated. We can say sadhu, sadhu. That's better than clapping.